Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And joining us now is Mitch Light. He covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, always appreciate our weekly chats with you. So I want to start with Georgia, because I feel like everybody is saying, you know, talking about Georgia, like they proved themselves, like Saturday against Kentucky was some sort of statement win. Am I wrong for thinking that taking care of business against a Kentucky team at home that you've beaten in the last 14 meetings is not really all that impressive and you're just doing what you're supposed to do? Am I just a Georgia hater?
Yes, you are.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I'm sorry. Beating Kentucky at home is not that impressive to me.
She's been through a lot of stress the last 2 weeks watching LSU with these unbelievable back and forth, like 55-54 games. It's taken a lot out of her.
You were just confused by watching good defense. You were all disoriented. You didn't know what it was like to watch.
No, look, I've been an LSU fan for quite some time. I've seen good defense. It's just not this year. It's just not this year.
So, you know, this is master of the obvious here, but like, it's we finally saw what we thought we would see from Georgia. That is why. So maybe we're going a little overboard. We're all looking for validation of why we had them ranked so high, and or why everyone had them number one, and why most people think they're the best team in the country. Because, you know, Kentucky is, I don't think anyone thought Kentucky was a top 10 team. They're a solid top 20, top 15 team. They're coming off an impressive win where they ran all over Florida. And just to get taken apart so thoroughly, there was just complete domination. Like, I think when I watch a game, and it was sort of like I'll look back to the Georgia-TCU National Championship game. I wanted to see a good game. I didn't think we were going to see one. But then once it was clear it wasn't a good game, you sort of just appreciated the dominance of Georgia. That's kind of like what I watched the Kentucky game Saturday night. Like, it would have been great to see a game go down to the wire. But it was just kind of fun watching a team click on all cylinders. And, you know, it was Carson Beck's best game. Brock Bowers continues to kind of flex his muscles there. So I will disagree, Carolyn. I'm with the groupthink here. I thought Georgia was just so dominant against a good Kentucky team.
You're the number one team in the country. You should be dominant against the Kentucky team at home. But I get it. I understand. But Mitch Light is with us, The Athletic. I think the most intriguing game in the SEC and one of the most intriguing games in the country this weekend is Texas A&M Tennessee. Tennessee coming off of the bye. Tennessee, after that loss to Florida, you know, licking their wounds a little bit. Texas A&M coming off of a loss against Alabama, where for the most part, I thought Texas A&M did what they should have done. Got to the quarterback, stopped the run, you know, played a fairly, you know, clean, penalty-free for the most part game, but still lost to Alabama. What are your thoughts on this A&M Tennessee game, and who needs that win more?
Yeah, I have no idea what to expect in this game. Like, you can say this about a lot of college football games. If we're being honest with ourselves, we can say it about almost any game. But like, if you told me that Texas A&M wins by two touchdowns or Tennessee wins by two touchdowns, I wouldn't be surprised either way. Now, I think I picked Tennessee at home. But to who needs this game more? You know, I mean, both fan bases are very demanding and expect to be, you know, kind of compete for conference championships. I would say, Jimbo, if Texas A&M loses convincingly, it's more damaging for Jimbo than anything can happen to Tennessee, obviously, because Josh Heupel's still, you know, relatively new in his tenure, and I don't think expectations were soaring for Tennessee. The thing about Texas A&M, you know, the fans like, okay, they lost to Miami in week two, but then they kind of got their act together, and they're beating Alabama at half, third quarter in the game. Those fans are thinking, hey, we're one half away from being in control in the SEC West. And then now they're back down on, you know, Jimbo, what do we do here? So I think there's a lot of frustration on their end. From the actual game, I mean, just Texas A&M has obviously been very good on defense. They've been very good at stopping the run. They stopped Alabama's run. You know, they made Jalen Miller beat them through the air, and he did enough of that. I thought A&M had opportunities to win that game. I didn't love Jimbo punting, you know, on fourth and two or fourth and one, whatever it was. So I'm with you, Caroline. I think this is the most intriguing game on the schedule this weekend.
Now, Mitch, I'm glad you brought up Alabama because I think that was a good win for them. They had to go to Texas A&M playing in front of that 12th man or whatever they call it up there or down there in Texas. But this Alabama team did what they needed to do. You said it right. Jalen Milroe played and did what he needed to do as a quarterback to get Alabama that win. Now, before all of this, you know, many thought, hey, Alabama is on their way down. And I don't know why you think that with a coach like Nick Saban and the way they recruit. But do you see, you know, them being able to consistently win with Jalen Milroe at quarterback? And they seem like they found them a go-to wide receiver in Jermaine Burton.
Yeah. The schedule is not very daunting. I think they're in complete control of the SEC West. Their most challenging games are home. You know, they get Arkansas this week, and they get Tennessee, LSU at home. They go to Kentucky and Auburn. A lot of weird – you know, Auburn's not very good this year. There's been a lot of weird things happen in that rivalry. We all know Hugh Freeze has had some success offensively there. So, yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think this is just a statement of the program that in a quote-unquote down year, they're probably still going to win the SEC West. And, you know, if you follow recruiting at all, like – you can say that this roster is comprised of all these number one recruiting classes, so, like, well, what happened there? But, you know, maybe some misses there, and they don't have the great quarterback in place. But they just signed a number one class last year. I think they had 8 5-star signees or 9. It was a record, whatever it was. They got a quarterback coming in, Julian Sain from California, who is the real deal. I don't know if he's going to start as a true freshman. I'm just saying that, like, to say that their talent level is still going to be extremely high in all the right places. Now, maybe next year will they go – you know, Burton's a transfer from Georgia, but will they go into the portal a little bit more, kind of like they did 2 years ago, and plug some holes? If they can plug a few holes next year with the overall talent in the roster, there's no way they're not going to be the team to beat in the SEC West next year.
Now, what do you make of that Kentucky loss to Georgia? Obviously, Georgia was the better team. They got out very quickly on Kentucky. But now Kentucky has Missouri coming up. And Missouri scores a lot of points. Then they got Tennessee at home. How do you think this thing shakes out for Kentucky?
Yeah, it seems like this is a spot we've seen for Kentucky a lot in the mm-hmm. past. You know, Mark Stoops, all the credit, he's built that program up. But it seems like there's been several years where they've had good records, and we're not quite sure how they are. And a 5-0 record becomes 8-4, which is still good. And it kind of looks like we might be headed down there. Like, the Georgia game just got out of hand, and Georgia played its best game of the year. You know, it was an indication there's a talent gap. We all know that. And if you saw Mark Stoops' comments, he addressed the talent gap and how they might close that gap. But, you know, Devin Leary has just, quite frankly, not been the player I think they thought they were getting and that everyone thought nationally. Like, I think – I'm just thinking out loud here. I think he's probably the second most in-demand transfer quarterback this year. Sam Hartman, obviously from Wake Forest and Notre Dame, was probably number one. But getting Devin Leary with Liam Cohen coming back, everyone thought that this was going to be a pass-first team. They're going to throw the ball. They've got really talented wide receivers. So I think their inability to be a consistent passing team has put a ceiling on this offense. You know, we know what Ray Davis has done. But if you can stop the running game and make Leary beat you, you know, That's kind of what Georgia did, and they were very successful at it.
Now, before I hand this over to Willie, I got to ask you the question. Urban Meyer, how much of a reality do you think that can be up in East Lansing?
I would be shocked.
Because it seems like the words that I'm getting, he was in East Lansing not too long ago, meeting with some individuals.
There's also words he was at Penn State, you know, years ago. So, I mean, you know, my colleague at The Athletic, Bruce Feldman, shot the rumors down, talked to Urban Meyer. Now, mm-hmm. Urban Meyer might not have been honest, with, you know, even though they worked together in Fox. He might not have been honest. But I think there's a better chance of Brian Kelly being the head coach of Michigan State than Urban Meyer next year.
I might be open to that idea. Give me a couple more games. And I could be on board.
Caroline's going to be kicking him out of LSU.
Oh, man. Mitch Light from The Athletic is with us. Mitch, we had Tim Hasselbeck on our show in the last hour, who was calling the Miami game with Wes Durham, good friend of ours, right? Former voice of the Commodores way, way back when.
Yes.
And so Miami did the Joe Pisarcik, basically, and got beat by Georgia Tech. What was it like in your world as that play went down?
Well, it was just – so, like, I'd clocked out working. Like, we have shifts on Saturdays.
Right.
And so, like, I was –
So you're just laying back as a fan at this point.
Yeah, basically. But, like, my routine is, like, I got the game on the main screen, and then I got my laptop, and I'm watching a game. So whatever time it was, like, I had Georgia Tech Miami on the main screen in USC on my laptop. And then after Miami got the first down with like 2 minutes to go, I was like, okay, this thing's over. So I shut the laptop. There's no other games on, put USC on. And then You actually should have Manny Navarro on, who covers Miami for us, The Athletic, and he wrote a great column. He's covered Miami for 20 years.
That would be great.
I'll give you Willie's number. He'd be great. And then I just get an OMG Slack message from Manny. Like 3 minutes later, I'm like, what's going on? Like, maybe he saw the USC score. They're down 17-0 at the half. And then I flip it back on. And then just our Slack messages at work at like 11 o'clock are like, just cannot believe what happened. I don't know if you guys have talked about it, and you could Google it, but, you know, have you guys talked about the Kevin Steele play when he was the head coach at Baylor versus UNLV in 1999? I mean, that is the same thing that happened. Baylor had lost X amount of games in a row. Kevin Steele was in his first or second year as coach. They're about to beat UNLV. They got the ball at like the UNLV 2-yard line. They're already winning the game. UNLV has no timeouts left. They should have just kneeled the ball. They hand it off. Fumble, 99-yard touchdown, last play of the game, UNLV wins. So, like, those are the two worst coaching decisions, like, I can remember in watching college football. Like, most coaching decisions we disagree with, but there's a gray area, like punting, not punting, throwing the ball. Like, there's rational arguments against it. There's just no sound argument against what Mario Cristobal did. And I thought Hasselbeck did a great job calling him out before it happened and after it happened. So, my long-winded answer is just stunning development, and, you know, I feel for the Miami kids, I feel for the Miami fans, but, like, I'm glad it happened because it was funny.
And really, for the ACC, you missed out on a 5-0 versus 5-0 kind of storyline, for sure. Tim, he had great perspective. If you missed it, for those listening, Tim was in the booth, and he had to double-check to make sure he was sure of himself before he went out on a limb to say, what are they doing? You know, basically, like, he has to make sure the math is right. Am I seeing this wrong? Am I going to sound like an idiot if I say they should be kneeling on the ball because it was so obvious? But when you're in that booth and things are moving so fast, you're like, wait a minute, I got to make sure I say this right because I don't want to sound like a fool. But you're right. He did a great job of saying it before it happened. Mm-hmm. This game is over. They should be sitting on the ball. And Wes Irm goes, and the ball pops free. and then Georgia Tech has it.
Well, Georgia Tech set on the ball.
If you play that game 100 times and they fumble every time and Georgia Tech gets it, like, Georgia Tech probably still only wins like 3 or 4 times.
And yes.
They're not a very good offense, and to go all that distance with no timeouts, that's why we love college football. There's like 100, there's whatever, 70 games a week, and just weird things happen almost every week. Now, that was one of the weirdest we've seen. Mario Cristobal did that, something similar at Oregon against Stanford a few years ago. It wasn't quite as egregious. They still would have to punt the ball, but he continued to run it rather than take a knee, and they fumbled, and Stanford beat him. So, you know, he owned it. I mean, there's nothing you can say. You can't make excuses there. Like, he owned it. His press conference yesterday, he owned it, but it's just brutal.
You mentioned USC, and you had to stay up really late to watch Caleb Williams. But you mentioned it. They're down 17-0, and he puts on a great show. They win. And so for his Heisman stuff, that probably wasn't all bad. But they're 6-0. They're playing at Notre Dame. I don't know. Why is their team struggling so much? Like, they should be winning a little easier, shouldn't they?
Yeah, you would think so. And I fell asleep and then woke up with about 5 minutes to go in the game, so I saw the end. I agree. First of all, like, he's statistically, that wasn't his best game, but if you watch the last 5 minutes in overtime, like, you just were even more impressed by him. Yeah, we've talked about this all year. They've got better talent on defense than they've had. Alex Grinch, you know, Lincoln Riley was loyal to his defensive coordinator, brought him back for another year. That could be this team's undoing because they have way too much talent on offense to be struggling like they were. And, you know, there's too many guys that are wide open. Like, if you watch the first quarter of that game, Arizona was going up with a redshirt freshman quarterback making a second start, going up and down the field on USC, guys wide open. Very concerning. Notre Dame's going to be interesting this week, but they still have to play, you know, Washington, still have to play Oregon. So I'd be shocked if USC navigates the schedule without a loss with that defense.
Quick thought on Oregon, Washington. Two teams that I would say the winner of this game is now talking playoffs if they have the inside track anyway.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch. I'd go Washington at home. Remember last year Washington beat them on the road. That was kind of the Michael Penix Jr. Like, if you can have a coming out party as a fifth-year senior, that was it. You know, you look real quick, you look at Washington kind of struggling on its first road game at Arizona, but then Arizona comes back and they have a legit offense. So maybe that wasn't as, you know, alarming there. So I think Oregon's probably the more complete team, offense, defense, than Washington. But I think the offensive firepower at Washington, they've had some injuries at wide receiver. Looks like those guys are going to be healthy. I think their offense at home, their fans hate Oregon, and they've been waiting for this game for years and years. Biggest home game in probably two decades. So I really like Washington in this one.
Mitch Light is with us. Mitch, you mentioned Mark Stoops' comments earlier, and I want to get back into that. And for those who haven't heard it, Mark Stoops, in his radio show after the Georgia game, after the Georgia blowout loss, he said, well, Georgia has bought a lot of their players. That's allowed now. Basically pleaded to Kentucky alumni and Kentucky boosters of, hey, if you give us a little bit more money to buy players, we can be like Georgia too. What's your opinion on Mark Stoops' comments there? Like, is he wrong?
I mean, it's not wrong. He's not wrong, but it's like, it's just a bad look. And first of all, this is not why Kentucky's program is where it is in Georgia. Right. Like, Georgia has been better than Kentucky for 100 years. So it's not like, and I know it's all relative to your conference. So Mark Stoops is looking at the teams he has to beat. But in the world of college football, Mark Stoops is in the upper middle class. Like, he's in the best, he's in the richest conference, and he's at a program that participates in NIL, maybe not to his liking, but like I mentioned earlier, his quarterback, Devin Leary, was in high demand in the portal. You know, his two best offensive players are transfers. Now, I don't know what Ray Davis, they got him for NIL. I'm sure he's making something in NIL. But when your two best players are fifth-year senior or sixth-year senior transfers, you can't be crying that poor in the NIL game. So I just think there's better ways of doing it. And it's just, to me, it's a bad look. I get why he's upset, but just, you got your butt kicked. Kentucky's been getting its butt kicked by Georgia for years. It's not because of NIL.
He's just spreading the word to the bluegrass. They just ante up a little bit, man. We'll get that payroll going up a higher. They've been doing it in basketball for decades.
Basketball and football is two different sports.
So people have money up there, man. It's
okay,
legal now. You can come out of the hiding. You can come out of the woodwork. You don't have to do it secretly anymore. Just put it in the kitty, man.
Yeah, but when you lose by 40 or 30, whatever it was, like, I don't think a few more linemen is going to close the gap that much.
They did. It was kind of a not just a little difference in talent there.
Although I
still think Kentucky's pretty good.
Oh, like, Kentucky's a good team, job. I believe. But just not good enough to beat Georgia right now.
Right.
Yeah, perfect storm of Georgia playing its best game, Kentucky coming off a high of the Florida game and just not playing great.
Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, sounds good. Take care.
Yep. All right, thanks. Did you guys hear Mark Stoops' comments there? Because I heard it, and I just had to roll my eyes. I do think there's a little bit of truth to it.
I think when he's talking to his fan base, I think that's – you lose a little perspective. Even though you're talking to your fan base, you are talking to everybody. And you have to realize how it's going to be taken within your fan base, which is – you know that's coming, but you sometimes don't think about – how it's going to sound outside of your fan base.
Well, it's going to sound to your locker room.
Yeah, but then again,
yes.
Do it right after a loss. I can see if you waited a while and then say, hey, listen, you know, we need to start doing some things as far as NIL, you know, beef it up a little bit. We can get some more recruits in here. But you can't do it. It sounds like you're just crying that you lost when you do it after getting beat down by Georgia. I mean, he's not wrong in a sense.
And on one hand, we should love the honesty, right?
Exactly.
I think every coach also should have a cool-down therapist after a loss, right?
The things you can't discuss after a loss.
Waterfalls and, like, rocks and, like, you know, aromatherapy in a room just to...
Just keep it to the game.
Before you go saying something like that, cool down, get a little shoulder rub or something before...
Read the room.
Yes.
You make $9 million a year to win like 8 games. Like, you got the cushy job in the SEC.
A cushy job.
You got a cushy job. You make a lot of money for a program that doesn't have very high expectations. Right.
Probably exceeding expectations for that reason,
I'm sure he is.
I mean, Florida, you know, it isn't looking very good. And in year two, they're ready to get Billy Napier out of there. Mark Stoops has been at Kentucky for like 30 years and has two 10-win seasons. Read the room, Mark. I don't think that they're entirely wrong at the idea of quote-unquote buying players. Mm-hmm. Because you look at the turnaround of so many programs that have basically been in oblivion for up to the last 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. USC has not been very good. No. Miami has not been very good. Texas has not been very good. These are all programs with rich histories that are now coming back around into the cycle and now becoming some of the more dominant teams within college football. I do think NIL has a play in that, because those are fan bases and boosters that are fed up with being bad, and they're willing to throw money at some of the top players in the country. But like Mitch said, it's not something new that Kentucky loses to Georgia. They lost the last 14 years.
Well, they should have been trying to get money at that university for the last 50 years, if that's the case. They ain't catching up with Alabama when it comes to Georgia when it comes to money. They already got a stockpile of money just sitting in a vault, ready to give to people in NIL. So.
I'll say this, too, about Kentucky's football fans. They are underrated, right? The reputation is,
yeah.
Oh, it's all basketball all the time. And it is.
It is
the lifeblood. It is.
It's 85% basketball.
Yes. But they'll show up for the football games. Yeah. They get good crowds at their games.
Because he's a good coach.
Yeah.
He's a good coach, and he's building a good program, and they're winning 8, 9, 10 games a year. But it's always that 2-3 games that they just can't get over the hump.
You're not going to beat Georgia. They have a tough time beating Tennessee on a consistent basis. You know, they've beaten Florida for the majority of the last 5 or 6 years.
Big game for them. They host Missouri. Yeah. I'll guarantee you they have over 50. They'll have a great crowd at that stadium.
They should.
That will be, and that's a key game. Mm-hmm. It's a key game for them.
Missouri's a good team.
Missouri is solid.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Clark Lee will join us coming up next. Tough loss for the Doors on the road in the Swamp. We'll get Clark Lee's perspective on it coming up next. Caroline Willie, D. Mays, 1025-1063 The Game.
Welcome.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. Hey, join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and D. Mays at Teddy's Tavern, located across from the Bridgestone Arena Plaza this Sunday from 11:30 to 1:30 as they break down the Titans-Ravens game. Our NFL award-winning NFL pregame show.
Absolutely. Always remember.
Always remember that it is, in fact, award-winning. It is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and the Beast Unleash. Vanderbilt on the road this past weekend to the Swamp. Fell to the Gators 38-14. And joining us now to break it all down is Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. Clark, appreciate you for joining us as always every single week. We saw Ken Seals this past week. AJ Swan held back, was still dealing with a lingering injury. Can we expect AJ Swan back this week against Georgia, or is it Ken Seals' job this weekend?
Right now, Ken's been taking reps with the ones. I think, you know, AJ's put together two of his best days in practice, which has been really great to see. And I'm talking about best days, you know, going back to last fall. I mean, I see a guy that's determined, and we know he's obviously very talented. He seems to be recovering from the injury, but also just resetting and refocusing, which was another part of this decision we've made to give Ken a run at it. We'll kind of continue to measure things day to day here, but you know, we'll look to coming out of the bye week, maybe have something a little more concrete in terms of how we're going to finish out the season or the plan to finish out the season. As it stands right now, Ken's running with the ones, and we'll kind of check progress as the week goes on and ultimately make the decision with who gives us the best chance to win against Georgia.
Got a lot of young pieces on this team, getting starting reps, getting quality reps. You know, on the road in Florida, that's not an easy place to play. This weekend coming up against Georgia, the number one team in the country, how valuable is it for these young guys to get that experience against really good teams in difficult environments? And how much better is that team, is that for your teams next year and the year prior, that some of these young guys have that quality experience?
Well, it's invaluable. And you know, we're really excited. I think we're equal parts frustrated and impatient for growth, with the team in general. And that's not just coaches, that's everybody. You know, we all want to be better. We want to play better. We want to cut the margins down and we want to win, but, equal parts frustrated and excited because you can see these young playmakers emerge. And sometimes, you know, when you're playing freshmen and even second year players too, you know, that you're going to have to play through some mistakes. Defensively, that might be, you know, a guy that, that reacts a little too late to a key and creates space on the snap. And, you know, it's hard to tackle in space. On offense, you know, that could be a missed blocking assignment or a drop ball. But you're also seeing flashes of explosive play and dynamic play from these young players. And, again, that's all part of the vision of the program. I think, it never happens fast enough, I think, particularly for me, and yet what I see right now is the program that we've set out to build. And that's, you know, over time transforming this roster and interjecting young, talented skill that we retain and build into an SEC-capable roster. And so this team's looking for more. We'll have a great challenge this week against Georgia, but we're excited for the opportunity, and these young players are going to benefit greatly from this game exposure and this experience.
We'll talk with Vanderbilt's head football coach, Clark Lee. Now, Coach, DeRicky Wright tried to give it a go. He showed a lot of heart out there, but it was clear that he was hobbled with the ankle injury, ended up leaving the game for a young secondary that has been struggling. How is his health? Do you expect him to try to give it a go again? Or do you expect him to be out in this game?
Yeah, it's not great. You know, he's struggling, and I want to, before I answer the question, first just comment on how much respect I have for him. I mean, you talk about a warrior. This guy, this injury happened in our second game on the first series of the game, and he has battled. And anyone who's ever experienced an ankle sprain, a high ankle sprain, knows how
it
hard
hurts.
This is. It hurts. And I know in Willie's era, they just rubbed some dirt on it and got him back out there. But
I've had that injury too. I mean, it's just that when you say high ankle sprain, I don't think people sometimes understand, Clark, that that's different than just sort of rolling the ankle. It's just you just can't move the way you want to move, and it takes time.
I wish I could give you all the science behind it, but it is. I had one when I was here, and I swear to you, I thought, oh, an ankle sprain, I'll be back in a week. And
right.
A month later,
it lingers.
And the only reason I was on the team is because I was willing to do whatever it took to be on the field. So I wasn't a guy that, you know, was going to let an injury linger if it didn't have to. So DeRicky's been battling through this, and he's just his determination to be out there with his teammates is so admirable. I think through that, you know, we've kind of prolonged the injury because he continues to stay on it, and we're trying to win games. It's the balance. It is the balance between, you know, can he perform at a level that gives us the best chance? At times we've been down a couple of safeties, three safeties at one point, and so you're trying to also just save some semblance of a depth chart. But, you know, I think for this week, DeRicky's doubtful. We're going to try to see how he feels, but I'm much more inclined to keep him out this week and to give him 2 weeks to hopefully get healthy. And then maybe out of the bye, we have a chance to get him back on the field playing at 100%. Because when he's 100%, he's a difference maker back there. There's no doubt about it. I'd love to see him get the opportunity to do that again.
Yeah, I would too. It's hard to see, you know, a young man like that who's worked so hard, and you know he has the talent, but he's hobbled by an injury that he can't do anything about other than just continue to get treatment in hopes that it gets better. Now, him not being able to be fully 100% or may not go, how important is it for guys like him, veteran guys like him, to make sure the morale? I know the coaches do it, but make sure the morale of the other players, especially the young players, in situations like this, that the morale stays high.
Yeah, it's really important, you know. And like you said, the coaches obviously are the coaches, and we're expected to carry that message. But what I've found is in these situations, what's effective is equal parts challenging and also being honest about the frustration we feel. I don't want to ever get in a situation where, you know, we become victims of our results or somehow feel like we don't have the control to climb our way out of where we are. And so, and yet I work closely with our team leaders, and there's a number of guys in that room, Jalen Mahoney, Ethan Barr, Kane Patterson, and Davian Davis, who's still with us, even though he's not playing. DeRicky's a part of this. Brad Ashmore, Julian Hernandez, those guys are in Justin Ball, excuse me. Those guys, you know, we meet once a week. That's both to kind of build them as leaders, but also to talk about where we are, where we're headed, what they feel, what they sense, and just create, you know, an aligned front, a united front coming out of that meeting. And I've been really impressed with those guys. And so then when they are on the field, obviously it becomes really important for them to use their voice to be courageous and confronting and demanding from their teammates. Because as you know, that the player-to-player accountability, which is one of our covenants, that's about 10 times more impactful than coach-to-player. And so that's something we're focusing on and giving attention to. I did think that we had as good of a Tuesday practice as we've had, and I was really encouraged by that. Again, we can muster all the spirit and energy we want. The game comes down to detail and execution, and so I'm excited to watch this group go through the week and refine the execution and dial in to the plan, and hopefully come out on Saturday and play our best game.
Clark Lee is with us, head coach, Vanderbilt Commodores. And Clark, last year, I think it's fair to say that the offensive line improved as the year went on. That was a big reason you guys started having success at the end of the season. How would you evaluate how they've done to this part this year? I know some guys have been banged up, but how do you try to grade it out right now?
Yeah, I mean, we've been disappointed. They've been disappointed, especially in not being able to establish the run game like we want to. You know, losing Junior Azebu early in the season, our starting left tackle, is never the way you want to start it out. He just had surgery yesterday, and he'll be out for the season. Grayson Morgan's been in and out of the lineup. We're trying to find the right mix of guys. And yet, I thought against Florida, they played as good as they played. I felt like they covered a really talented defensive line up in the run game. There wasn't a lot of space there, but we didn't have free runners like we'd had in the past. I thought they did a nice job there. I thought the operation was really clean in a hostile environment. I credit them and Ken for getting the protections right. And even though the pocket collapsed quickly, again, I didn't ever sense there was a situation where we had a free runner. You know, they did a really nice job navigating what I feel like is a defense that can put a lot of pressure on you. And so I see improvement, and we're going to have to continue that. Obviously, we play against a really good front this weekend, but, you know, that's the signature of this league is, you know, playing the interior line of the scrimmage. And, you know, we'll need them to continue to improve and to continue to gel and hopefully get a couple of guys back healthy. Grayson's back out at practice today. Jake Ketchick, who's been out for the season, should be available after the bye, and he can provide some depth in the interior offensive line. And so we'll be excited to get those guys back involved and keep marching forward.
You've talked about, when you've been with us before, what you're trying to emphasize to a guy like Will Shepard, the little things that can make a big difference for success not only this year but going forward. I know he probably has aspirations at the next level. He's a talented guy. It just dawned on, I thought about that the other day when the punt drops and they got an extra, I don't know how many yards, but that changed field position a lot. But those little things can turn into big things, right?
Absolutely. You're watching the game there with a coach's eye. I mean, that's a moment where we start two possessions on the -5. The first was a miscommunication between our two returners, and one of whom was a freshman, Junior Sherrill. But, you know, Jay McGowan fair catches, signals for a fair catch. Junior Sherrill comes over and catches the ball. And what happens in that instance is you don't get the ball marked off as a fair catch. It becomes down where it was caught. And so we start on the five there. And then on the punt return, the one thing I'll say about that one really was that the ball was drifting. So, you know, we usually will have an idea of where the punt's going based off a few factors. Could be the way they release at the line of scrimmage, could be the way the punter angles his hips. But generally speaking, we'll cheat to the direction of the punt before the punt. It was a miss hit. So the ball was drifting across the field and was in kind of an awkward position. And he made the decision ultimately that we didn't want to repeat of the Wake Forest game, you know,
right.
Where
so he's you're in between. That's a catch 22 there.
That's right. And yet, you know, as we look at it and we coach him through it, it's what are the margins we can win early in that so that we can get in position to field that ball, because again, that's another one where we start, you know, backed up and puts added pressure on our offense. It's really trying to get in rhythm and find early down success.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Clark, appreciate you for joining us as always. I know West End is going to be popping this weekend, so good luck against Georgia.
Thanks, guys. Good to talk to you, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Always great to chat with you, Clark. Appreciate Clark Lee for joining us every week, as he does every Tuesday at 1:30. Let's wrap it up with your phones. Everything's on the table. Predators, Titans, college football. Nothing's off limits. Right into your thoughts coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and the Game Nashville app. The people have spoken.
Yeah.
So let's get to the phones.
Let's do it.
Phone lines driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Matthew in Nashville, Texan. Says Kentucky is the Dallas Cowboys of college football. Every year they start the season strong and we overhype them. Then come November or October, they collapse and go 8-4 and go to a mad bowl game. To borrow a Stephen A. Smith quote, they are the gift that keeps on giving. Kentucky is so not the Dallas Cowboys of college football. I feel like you actually have to win something every once in a while to be the Dallas Cowboys of college football.
Didn't they win something back in the day?
They won a national championship in 1950.
Exactly. Like the Cowboys won Super Bowls, like, you know, 80 years ago.
Like Chris Sanders said, they do it all the time.
Exactly.
It happened 6 years ago.
Well, I mean,
I understand the idea of being overhyped going into the season. And that's a very Tennessee fan take. I know from the Tennessee fans in my life, they tend to get very irritated with a lot of the love that Kentucky gets going into the season.
I think I would say Tennessee fans are more like Dallas fans than Kentucky fans are.
Probably so.
You know, because Tennessee has
trying
they've
to
had
back to
yeah they've had a rich program, and they've won a national championship, and they've had, you know, a great quarterback, and they all every year they think this is the year we're going to be back, this is the year, and they almost get there and they do something like they did last year, and they lose to who did they lose to? Ole Miss or South Carolina?
So Kentucky?
I'm talking about UT,
South Carolina,
and then everything is gone. Kentucky, I don't think they're on that level. Mm-hmm. I think they go in thinking, you know, we got a good program.
Yeah.
And maybe if this go right, if we can just win these two games, we can put ourselves in a position to be in the playoffs. Now, good part about this, Kentucky fans, when they expand it, you might just get in. You
there
might
you know.
Get in. So there you go. There's hope for Kentucky fans.
Do you believe that they will in an expanded playoff?
You know what? If they, because they're what? They're usually 8-4, 10-2, somewhere around there. I think if they pull out a 10-2 season, depending on who they win, I think they could get in. I truly believe they can.
Go Big Blue.
Go Big Blue.
Woohoo. Woo-hoo. One texter texts in, coming for you, D. Mason, Willie.
Oh, man.
One texter says, I love Willie and D. Mace, but they sound like amateurs today. Taking Henry off the field is playing into the other team's hands. Put Spears, a.k.a. Chris Brown 2.0, in the Hall of Fame already.
That again, D. Mace, let me
you take it because
so
I'm
you
not,
don't have to get
I'm
too
not,
emotional.
Yeah,
okay?
You take it because I'm not going to do
Did
it anymore.
Did anybody say, take Henry off the field? No.
I didn't hear that.
No. Take Henry off the field? No. Mm-hmm. Nobody said that.
Selective hearing.
Yeah. We're talking about get a guy that's averaging 5.8 yards per carry.
Your own coach said he's explosive.
Get him the ball more. That's all I'm saying. And my theory, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, D-Mates, but I think your thought is too, I think I heard you say this, is a few less carries for Derrick Henry could mean a more effective Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
So the carries right now are 86-27. If the carries are more in the next 100 carries, more like 76-37, that might be a smarter way to get more out of both of them and the team.
Well, I mean, I guess you're calling your coach an amateur too, because Vrabel is basically saying we got to find a way to get this guy more touches because he's explosive when he gets the ball in his hand. Again, I would never sit on these airwaves, and I don't think I've ever sat on these airwaves and said anything bad about Derrick Henry, ever. Even when, you know, y'all say he wasn't hitting the holes the way he should and maybe they need to replace him, I still was saying give the kid a chance, he'll be fine. It's just he got to adapt to the NFL way. But now you have another guy on your roster that you can because before you really didn't have it where you can defer some of the carries. Now you have someone on your roster that you can defer carries to and feel good about it. Your own coach said that in so many words. So me saying that, I'm just basically echoing really what he's saying, but I'm watching film and I'm what he's talking about, I see it. I actually see what Vrabel is talking about. So if I'm an amateur, that means Vrabel's an amateur as well. Because Vrabel said, hey, listen, this guy, he needs to touch the ball more because he gives us explosive plays.
If you're averaging 5.8 yards per carry, you should get the ball more.
You've earned the right to get a couple of more. I'm not saying make it 50-50 with he and Henry, because Henry has done enough to where until he shows a complete drop-off, then okay. But go to what Willie said, you know, 36-76, somewhere around there. I would say even 60-40. So at the end of the season, you will have a healthier, stronger Derrick Henry.
And also, Tajay Spears, if you think I'm just being box score guy, segue into the next show, right? Because we talk about box score. If your eye test isn't telling you that Tajay Spears is pretty dynamic when he has the ball, you're not watching very close.
You don't know football then.
And if we're going to preview the next show, I think that you two might just get labeled the co-presidents of Boo-hoo Tajay Spears group.
I love it. Bring it on.
And we're ready. We're ready for it.
We'll be back tomorrow.
Charter members.
We'll be back at 11 a.m. Boo-hoo Tannehill Crew is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.